Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. Some few of you may know him as a congressman from Illinois. Others might know him as U.S. ambassador to NATO, or how about as the director of Amylin Pharmaceuticals? But no doubt just about all of us know him for this.
As we know, there are known knowns. There are things we know we know. We also know there are known unknowns. That is to say, we know there are some things we do not know. But there are also unknown unknowns. The ones we don't know, we don't know.
That, of course, is former Secretary of State Donald Rumsfeld, the subject of Earl Morris's latest
Secretary
of Defense. Thank you. Well, Earl Morris, it's a pleasure. And the documentary is The Unknown Known, and it is spectacular. Earl, thank you for the correction. You are Earl Morris. Is that correct? Did I get that right?
You got that much right.
No need to correct that.
Okay, fine.
So, Earl Morris, I said as you're walking into the studio that when I watched the documentary, I was horrified. And I guess I was horrified because this is a very serious subject, you know, war and Guantanamo and all these things. And Donald Rumsfeld struck me as almost like this was a big game with all his plays on words. He was almost cheerful. And I just, that was my takeaway at the end of it. I thought.
Why almost?
Well, okay, totally cheerful. It was like it was a big, a joke is maybe too strong a word, but there's hubris. And anyway, that was my takeaway. What was yours? What do you think of this man? You spent hours and hours with him.
My takeaway?
Yes.
Having made this movie, maybe I don't have to think about it anymore.
Okay.
Well, you're not. Your style of interviewing, for lack of a better expression, I think interviewing is fair. You obviously choose to let people talk, not to be confrontational. Occasionally, we'll get to a second, you did challenge Rumsfeld on a couple of things. How do you decide, how do you make that decision when you have strong feelings that essentially let Rumsfeld speak for himself, let him explain his life? And I assume the end of that sentence is, and let the viewer, let the filmgoer judge him or herself. That's a fair description of your style, is it not?
It is. A friend of mine once said that you can never trust someone, maybe you can't trust anybody, but you can never trust someone who doesn't talk a lot, because how else would you know what they're thinking? There is this underlying idea. You allow someone to talk in an attempt to uncover what they're thinking, who they are. And that is at the heart of the enterprise, for better or for worse.
But you really, I want to stay on this for a second.
Oh, we're arguing with each other.
We are indeed.
I want to get
you
back
resisted,
to what I
with
to
a
ask.
Couple of exceptions I can think of. You resisted what had to be an internal urge to challenge. Just to play one clip. Here you are. You just pointed out to Rumsfeld there was a lot of confusion amongst the American people about whether Saddam Hussein was actually involved in the 9/11 attacks and al-Qaeda. And here is Rumsfeld's reaction to what you had to say, Earl.
Oh, I don't think so. It was very clear that the direct planning for 9/11 was done by Osama bin Laden's people, al-Qaeda, and in Afghanistan. I don't think the American people were confused about that.
In 2003, in a Washington Post poll, 69% said they believe it is likely the Iraqi leader was personally involved in the attacks carried out by al-Qaeda.
I don't remember anyone in the Bush administration saying anything like that, nor do I recall anyone believing that.
Mr. Secretary, today in a broadcast interview, Saddam Hussein said, "There is only one truth. Iraq has no weapons of mass destruction whatsoever." And he went on to say, "I would like to tell you directly, we have no relationship with al-Qaeda."
And Abraham Lincoln was short.
Would you care to respond directly to what Saddam Hussein has said today?
How does one respond to that? It's just a continuous pattern. This is a case of the local liar coming up again and people repeating what he said and forgetting to say that he never, almost never, rarely tells the truth.
Well, what stayed with me, Earl Morris, is he didn't miss a beat with you, even though you directly contradicted his assertion. He didn't miss a beat with the press. Well, what did that say to you about the man? The facts never stood in the way of his assertion that he was right.
Well, first, you have to explain to me, how is that not challenging him?
No, I said those are two examples. You also challenge him on the whole, we don't assassinate foreign leaders, and you mentioned Dora Farm. Those are the two I wasn't criticizing
you for this.
There are many
throughout the movie. What amazes me in many of the commentaries that I've read about this movie, alas, I do read my own reviews. I should know better, but I don't. People say that he wasn't challenged. He's challenged repeatedly. There are dozens of instances throughout this movie. What's so interesting is he doesn't see them as a challenge. He ignores them. He rattles on as if nothing really has been said. As if, maybe not as if, let me take the as if away. We'll lift the magic slate and erase it. He's oblivious to criticism, to contradiction. He lives in his own Rumsfeld bubble, impervious to criticism, isolated from everything.
But you're not oblivious to criticism. That's pretty obvious. Is that correct, Earl Morris?
I soak it up.
Well, I think, Earl Morris, that what you did, and it's a classic technique, and I think it worked brilliantly in this case, was to give this man enough rope to hang himself. And he, in my estimation, you didn't want to tell me what you thought about him because you said you'd done the movie, so you don't have to answer that question. But I think it's pretty clear what you think about him. And I want to play another clip. This absolutely drove me insane, is his whole play on words. He's talking in this case about absence and the absence of evidence. It's an example of how he shaped our foreign policy. Let's hear that absence of evidence clip, please.
Subject to discuss with P, meaning the President of the United States. The absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. When you say the absence of evidence is not evidence of absence, what you're saying is that there is an absence of evidence about something. But you ought not to say that, therefore, that is proof that something doesn't exist. It's an easy thing to go from the first part of that in the wrong direction and say, well, the absence of evidence means it isn't there.
Now, I listened to Donald Rumsfeld saying things like this and similar things like this, and Earl Morris, it seemed like we were doing a crossword puzzle or something. It was all like it was a word game to show who was the cleverest at coming up with these phrases. And you've interviewed a lot of people. This is sort of unusual, isn't it?
The level of nonsense, the level of gobbledygook, this is quite extraordinary.
Yes, I thought so, too.
And what is really extraordinary is that we, and I include myself to a certain extent, bought into it. How many people have I heard say, oh, the unknown, the known, known, blah, 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 blah. This is really deeply profound. Absence of evidence is an evidence of absence. What is Donald Rumsfeld really telling us? He's telling us that evidence doesn't really count for much. So why don't we just make things up as we go along?
So, but is the fault solely with him, Errol Morris, or is it with the American people? When I was watching, I watched it again last night, your film, and it brought back stark memories of what a rock star he was when he'd have those press conferences, I think in 2003, where he answered virtually nothing. The press was fawning over him. Wasn't he voted sexiest man of the year in People magazine or some such thing? It's pogo-esque, is it not? Isn't part of the fault with us for buying into this drivel?
Well, there's a simple answer to that. Yes.
We're talking to Errol Morris, a man of few words here. Errol Morris's latest documentary, which, by the way, is spectacular, is called The Unknown Known.
Let's contrast this to another former Secretary of Defense who was the star in the fog of war, your 2003 portrait, Robert McNamara. We have a little sound of the former Secretary of Defense, Robert McNamara, about one of the mistakes he believed the United States made in Vietnam. Here it is.
What makes us omniscient? Have we a record of omniscience? We are the strongest nation in the world today. I do not believe we should ever apply that economic, political, or military power unilaterally. If we had followed that rule in Vietnam, we wouldn't have been there. None of our allies supported us. Not Japan, not Germany, not Britain or France. If we can't persuade nations with comparable values of the merit of our cause, we'd better re-examine our reasoning.
So, Errol Morris, how are these two men different?
One thing's pretty clear. Donald Rumsfeld never really listened to Robert McNamara. I have no idea whether he saw the fog of war. My guess is he did not, but he did tell me in my first meeting with Donald Rumsfeld is he hated it. And he went on to explain, talking about Robert S. McNamara, that man had absolutely nothing to apologize for. I differ from him in that respect.
You know, Errol Morris, I've known you now for about, I think, 12 minutes. Is it fair to say that you're a fairly intense character? Is that a fair statement, characterization of you? It is it not?
I don't know.
Well, it is. Trust me on that. How do you shift, Errol Morris, from doing things like Fog of War, The Unknown Known, and then we all know that you directed commercials with 25 men by the name of Ronald McDonald praising Taco Bell's product? I'm serious. How do you compartmentalize things in a way that you can do those, which are brilliant, by the way, and I love them. I don't know what the public reaction was to them. And then you do these brilliant, in the case of Fog of War, Academy Award winning, and this terrific new thing, relatively new thing about with Rumsfeld. How do you do those two different kinds of, how do you live in those two worlds?
In part out of necessity. Like most people, I do have to earn a living. And commercials have been a viable way for me to continue to work as a filmmaker, to do many of the things that interest me, and at the same time, provide for myself and my family.
Would you do them if you didn't, if it wasn't about the money? Because I think they're wildly entertaining. I think entertainment is a pretty valuable contribution to life. Would you not do them if it wasn't about the money? Would you just do documentaries?
Well, I've done over 1,000 commercials. Mm. So they're habit forming. Could I just give it up at this point? Probably not, because I enjoy doing it.
Can I play you one more? I'm sorry. We're talking to Errol Morris.
We're talking to Errol Morris, and in his latest film is The Unknown Known. You know, you had extraordinary access, obviously, to Donald Rumsfeld. How many hours did you actually shoot? How many hours did your conversations go on for?
Over 30 hours.
Okay, over 30 hours. That is extraordinary access to Donald Rumsfeld. And I kept thinking, and obviously you were thinking, because you ended your film by asking them this, why he ever agreed to talk to you. Let's hear this this clip from the film, one of the more memorable moments in it.
One last question. Why are you doing this? Why are you talking to me?
That is a vicious question. I'll be darned if I know.
And then the curtain comes down.
So would you care to tell us why you think he did talk to you?
The answer is a curious answer. It's his answer, really, to everything. Why did we invade Iraq? I'll be darned if I know. Why did we abrogate the Geneva Conventions? I'll be darned if I know. Why am I talking to you here in the studio today? I'll be darned if I know.
This is you now, not Donald Rumsfeld, correct?
Or this no? is me, more or less.
Okay.
I'm trying for concision here. But you did ask me, why do I think Donald Rumsfeld talked to me? Because we're talking about a man so oblivious to everything, so utterly self-confident, that what was there to lose? It was just another, as far as he was concerned, another press conference, another opportunity to rattle on. Vanity. My guess, and I can't answer for anyone other than myself, you really understand why he's making the movie through watching it.
Have you heard from him?
Well, I've...
Post the movie, I mean.
We continued to correspond briefly after the completion of the movie. Donald Rumsfeld is known for these endless snowflakes, these memos that were distributed by the thousands when he was Secretary of Defense. I also was the recipient of a whole number of snowflakes. I told him that I would show him rough cuts of the movie as we went along. I invited criticism. Please tell me what you like and what you don't like. Even though it was absolutely clear contractually that he had no control over the final editing of the movie. The decision of what to include or exclude was solely mine.
Did he ever take you up on your offer?
Oh, I have all of these... Someday they should all be published. Donald Rumsfeld's criticisms, my replies, his replies to my replies, etc.
So do you think he had the insight after seeing the film to draw away how, in some places, ridiculous he looked?
I could answer that one. The answer is a big fat no, is it not, Errol Morris? I think he's probably proud of himself, don't you think?
A very, very, very big very fat no.
Well, that's really scary, isn't it?
Okay. You got to see this if you've not.
It, it
you
is.
Have to.
Like I said, when I saw Errol Morris, I was horrified that this was the man that was running our defense strategy during the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. It was horrifying.
And sending
to me.
Thousands of young men and women to war.
Many people, and I can sympathize with them, were disappointed that I just didn't get up and hit him with a brick. However, that was not the nature of the enterprise.
I think you did hit him with a brick, actually.
It was
Errol,
a,
thank
fantastic,
you. It's a pleasure.
Fantastic documentary. Errol Morris is an Academy Award-winning filmmaker. You look at this new film, Unknown, Known, you'll understand why. Thank you so much for being with us, and thank you all for listening to another edition of Boston Public Radio. Tune in tomorrow for medical ethicist Art Kaplan, and we also continue our round of interviews with the gubernatorial candidates. Joe Avalon is with us tomorrow. Our show is a production of WGBH Radio. Our production team, Chelsea Murs, Will Roslip, Amanda McGowan, Devin Karambalis, and our engineer is John Parker. I am Marjorie Egan.
And I am Jim Browdy.
Thanks for listening, and please tune in again tomorrow.